A rumored reboot of Little House on the Prairie has the far right up in arms. This is TFG Unbuttoned.
It's the Focus Group Unbuttoned with Jim Bennett and John Nash, an off-the-cuff take on politics, pop culture, and current events.
Welcome to TFG Unbuttoned. John Nash here with my good friend and co-host, Tim Bennett. We are the companion podcast to the Focus Group, which you can catch on Wednesdays in video form at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on YouTube or on Facebook Live. And as always, this is all part of your audio feed if you are subscribing or liking the show. And you can always check us out at focusgroupradio.com, and you'll learn about our partners there, including our favorite Mixed Choice Video, America's classic movie and TV authority since 1987. We'll be visiting with them a little later in the broadcast, and we welcome them to Tim. I think with Critics' Choice is going to be like 5 or 6 years now. Does that sound about right?
Might be longer. I don't know, though. I know, we'll have to see. We should do the math. I have to do the math.
Well, either way, we're glad they're on board.
I was trying to do the math the other day, but sometimes you and I, with our dates, you know, we have to write them down. I have to go back and look at the book, since you know I'm the note taker.
Yes, yeah. Well, you know, and you know how memory is, and if you go back X number of days, it's like, it gets a little bit fuzzy. Hey, Bob and I were talking about just watching TV when we were kids, like the networks that we had available to us on broadcast, right? So he lived in Jersey, and he had access to, I think, Channel 2, Channel 4, Channel 7, Channel 5, which you and I may not have gotten up in Connecticut, Channel 9, and Channel 11. So to put that in perspective, it's CBS, NBC, ABC. I don't know what 5 was. I guess 5 might have been Fox back then, or maybe it was something different. And Channel 9 was local to us. It was called WOR-TV. And then Channel 11 was PIX. And so we also were talking about some of our favorite things during the day that we did as kids. And I want to play a little audio clip for you to see if you know what this is. Now, can you name that? Do you recognize that?
No, I don't.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I can't. Well, can you give me a clue or a hint? Is it a cartoon?
It was for movies.
Oh, was it the afternoon movie?
The 4:30 movie.
4:30 movie.
They would cram a two-hour film into an hour and a half. That's how Before I saw dinner. Planet of the Apes. Like, I think we all saw like Planet of the Apes and a whole bunch of movies that had been edited or for time. And when we saw when I first saw like Planet of the Apes without being shoved into an hour and a half, I was like, oh my God.
I was like, a lot of those networks they would cram like a Monday night movie and
yep.
And I guess you sat and you watched a movie, but I don't.
Bob has fond memories of the $1 Million movie.
Oh yeah.
And he said took him years before he realized that the theme for the $1 Million movie was actually the theme from Gone with the Wind. Dun, 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 dun.
I didn't know that either. That's
yeah, so
funny.
we were just having a funny time remembering what we used to watch and what times of the day we used to watch it, because it was The Munsters, Bewitched, you know, I Dream of Jeannie, you know, all these. They were reruns when we were kids, but then it all kind of came to a crashing end at the 4:30 movie, and I was glued to the set if I liked the movie. So it was just a fun little memory lane type thing.
Jeez, yeah, we had those same, because we were in the area of Connecticut, which was the western part, so it was considered New York, right?
Yep.
So we got 5 and 9. And 11 as well. And I remember 5 had on Merv Griffin at night.
That's right.
Which my father loved to watch, Merv Griffin. And you mentioned Little House on the Prairie is one of our stories here on the show. And the reason I went back and I looked at the schedule is because we did not watch, you know, you had one TV. We did not watch Little House on the Prairie. And I was like, what else would have been on? Can you guess what was on adjacent to Little House on the Prairie?
Any this guess? Is a great question. Because I was a Little House viewer, so I would not have known what might have been opposite. What was opposite?
So I went, because I said, we did not watch it. There must have been something else on. So I went and I looked, and it certainly was. I remember watching this all the time. Tony Orlando and Dawn.
They, a variety show, right?
It was right. They were on against Little House on the Prairie, and I said, "Well, I remember my dad. We always watched Tony Orlando and Dawn." I'm like, "That's why we didn't watch Little House. We were a Waltons family. We watched the Waltons on Thursday." Yeah, I talked
about this before. Good night, yeah. John Boy.
Yeah,
we were wholesome. Just think of saying that for a minute, Tim. We were a Waltons family. You were a Little House family.
Yeah. You were a Munsters family. We were an Adams family. Yeah, it's the same sort of thing, right? So. We watched.
Yeah, actually, Bob, I was Munsters, and Bob has a huge soft spot in his heart for the Addams Family.
Addams Family. Yeah, I was not so big. I mean, we watched it because you didn't have a lot of options, but it was really more the Munsters. And the more I watched the Munsters, they were on the other day on Pluto. I was looking through, and they were on the Monster Channel. And Herman was going to get a driver's license, and they go to some little bumfuck town, you know, in East Jibip, because that's the only way they think he could pass. And the underlying, again, the political underlying tones are just hilarious in reference to small town America. Munsters,
you used to say this to me. Yeah. I think there was a lot of sly stuff going on with that show.
Yeah, one of my favorite ones, and I think I posted it, was somebody wanted to, Marilyn comes in and says, "Oh, there's a man out front. He's interested in renting the house for the weekend. He says he'll pay $1,500. He says, Herman goes, I wonder if Congress is in town.
Isn't that brilliant?
It's just like Bum Bum, you know, that just moves on. Who would pay that kind of money? I wonder if Congress is in town.
That was Fred Gwynne who played Herman Munster.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, he had such an interesting career in Hollywood. And, you know, he sort of had this redemption or spotlight in the pop culture moment with My Cousin Vinny. When he was the judge. Yeah. Yeah. And he's great in that. And, but in that show, in the Munsters, I mean, great comedic timing, right?
Yeah. And he hated the fact that he was typecast as Herman for the rest of his life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's a bit I think we talked about it years ago. Howard Stern, I'd have to find it, but Howard Stern had Stuttering John go to interview him about My Cousin Vinny. And the guardrails were, do not talk about the Munsters. So, of course, what's Howard Stern do? Sends a guy out, and that's all he does. Did you think Marilyn was hot? did you really sleep with Lily? You know, it was like all this. And he's like, I beg your pardon. John, we're not going to talk about this. I'm here to talk about my movie. And he just kept asking Munsters questions, and, you know, the thing went off the rails, of course. But brilliant, you know, once again, brilliant bits by Stern in some regards.
So. And... You know, frankly, I go back to some of the TV we watched, some of the best and most unusual TV ever created. I mean, I know everybody can look at the stuff now and say it's amazing and stuff, but a lot of stuff was woven into those shows we grew up with, very subtly.
Well, it's what you and I were doing advertising.
Uh-huh. If it's the right consumer, you get the message.
Yep.
All right, let's move along here. We have three stories for you this week, carefully curated by the minions here at TFG Unbuttoned, and that would be me and Tim.
By the staff.
Or Tim and me, sorry. Yeah, there we go, going down, you know, Grammar Alley already. First story comes to us from Minnesota, and the headline reads, Minnesota Pride Group raises $50,000 after dropping Target as a sponsor. So the nonprofit that organizes the annual festival cut ties with the retailer Target after 18 years because they very quickly dropped their DEI policies. And just as a side note, you know, I don't even know that everybody can agree on what DEI means for every individual organization, because sometimes it's just about inclusion or opportunity. But it's become the bogey word on the far right, along with, you know, our trans individuals and citizens. So it's like, get the guns firing. So I think this is an interesting and daring move they did, because we know that the corporate money is very helpful for these organizations. So for them to drop and then say no to Target, and then they had a campaign to raise money, and they raised about $50,000, which all goes towards, it says here, every dollar donated goes directly back into helping us create inclusive spaces, support local artists, and provide resources that make a difference year round. And they thanked everybody in the Twin Cities for standing with them. I think this could be a future model, but I just wonder how you keep that going with individual donations, because people's interest in this wanes and waxes, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so that Target, which is based in Minneapolis, as John noted, they've been a sponsor of Pride for 18 years, And the Pride organizers said that it was important that they send a message to the companies that they need to do the right thing. So I agreed to that, but I was really more a little bit shocked by Target's response to them. And I'll read what they said. They said, as a retailer that serves millions of consumers every day, we understand the importance of staying in step with the evolving external landscape now and in the future. So they've essentially bowed to MAGA, right? Because they've essentially said, well, landscapes change, so we need to as well. And so for a brand like Target that was certainly known for supporting the LGBTQ community, which, by the way, has been changed to LGB federally.
By executive order, yeah.
Right. So they have, to me, they bowed to MAGA. So I don't, I think good for the folks at Minnesota Pride, and I'm glad they were able to replace the funding that's going to be missed by the Target representation. But as you said, though, everybody's out looking for dollars. I saw on social media over the weekend, the HRC is looking, Trevor's looking, Glad's looking, as we're ramping up and we see what's going on with the new leader we have. So I don't know. I don't know how it ends. I mean, it's only been, what, 8 days, 9 days? How...
we got like four more years already, right?
Right.
That comment you read back from... that stuck with me, Target, too, for a very key reason. When they said, you know, we understand the importance of staying in step with the evolving external landscape. So that means if the evolving external landscape is about bringing back cruelty, about discrimination, about saying what you want to say about someone without any restraints, you know,
bullying.
You know what I'm talking about.
Bullying, yeah.
And you're telling us that that's your job as a retailer, but isn't it also to kind of acknowledge that you do have these customers and that maybe it's not such a dramatic thing to simply take and it's not even taking a stand? Like you and I've often wondered about that language, like, you know, supporting their local pride because the store has been so LGBTQ friendly and a known quantity. It's not really taking a stand. It's just doing good business. But
right
now, I guess
let everybody know they're welcome to shop.
Yeah,
what you want to know. You want to know you feel welcome to shop there, and you're welcome to shop there to spend your money. And if I'm not, I'm not going to. And, you know, this list of people who have backed off, I mean, Costco is going full steam ahead, and they're fighting now with a number of states' attorneys generals who have threatened Costco that if they don't change their policies,
right,
they're going to kick them out or not let them open new stores or whatever they think they can do. And Costco's like, no, it's good for business. And that's all Target had to have simply said. I saw a headline right before we came on that Target has actually said they've already felt or they've already feel that they've felt the pressure that sales have been down, which happened when they did the Pride thing on the one side, right? So now it's whiplash the other way. They're getting backlash from the LGBTQ consumers that are not.
Yeah, I don't know
them.
Who's consulting with them internally or how they, because when you were at Subaru and we were dealing with whatever issues popped up, the company line had always been, it's smart business, it's good business.
Right.
We know who our customers are. And, you know, here's the other thing I'll close with. If everybody starts throwing around the Supreme Court decision about companies or people too, you know, Citizens United.
Yeah.
Well, a company has the right to do what they want to do. And you mentioned Costco pushing back against the stripping of DEI. 98% of the Costco shareholders at their recent meeting voted in favor of maintaining those programs.
Yep.
Those shareholders are made up of people from around the country, right? So it's just, I don't know. This is just a weird period. I don't want the 4 years to fly by because then we'll be 4 years older, but I would also love to just be able to block some of this out because it's so ridiculous, right?
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
And speaking of ridiculous, our next story I teased at the beginning, and Melissa Gilbert, who played Half Pint / Laura Ingalls on one of my favorite shows growing up, Little House on the Prairie, she tells Megyn Kelly, watch the original again after Little House on the Prairie anti-woke comment comes out. So Megyn Kelly, I don't think she thinks before she speaks pretty much about anything from what I can tell. I don't know how she ever got to where she was. And she's still in the MAGA crowd. Remember that first debate she moderated, blood
coming
out of her eyes, blood, and she's still bowing at the altar. But so it was announced that Netflix is doing a reboot of the show. I'm not sure why, frankly. I think the original stands on its own, but you know, let's reboot it. So then Megyn Kelly posts on X, formerly Twitter, now the dumpster on fire rolling down a street in San Francisco. And she says, if you wokeify, if you wokeify, I mean, Jesus Christ,
new
if
word.
You wokeify Little House on the Prairie, I will make it my singular mission to absolutely ruin your project. Well, God bless you, Megyn Kelly. I mean, wow. Okay, you're going to make it your singular mission outside of doing everything else you're doing. So Half Pint / Melissa Gilbert, who I adore, came back with this interesting thing. I don't remember where she posted. Because she's not on that platform, that platform. She said, apparently, Megyn tweeted asking that Netflix not wokeify their Little House remake. Watch the original again. TV doesn't get too much more woke than we did. We tackled racism, addiction, nativism, anti-Semitism, misogyny, rape, spousal abuse, and every other woke topic you can think of. Thank you very much. And you know what? She's not wrong. If you watch that show through a bunch of seasons, they carefully tackle a bunch of stuff. So what'd you think of this little spat here?
Well, I loved, and then she also said at the end, watch any episode on any streaming platform anywhere in the world.
She tagged
Megyn Kelly to let her know. Now, I thought this was a great, and I like when people do this, because she handled it, Melissa Gilbert handled it head on and was factual. And again, just showed that Megyn Kelly had either no idea about what the show really was or wasn't, and was just jumping on this woke bandwagon, anti-woke bandwagon that seems to be prevalent right now. So I love the fact that she went right back at her. It reminds me a bit of Pete Buttigieg when he goes right back at him. When he gets questioned or he gets checked, he goes right back at him with the facts. So many of these shows. You know, even All in the Family, for all its, oh my God, I can't believe All in the Family, Archie was so this or that or anything else. There was a message every week with what the way Archie's behavior was, right?
Yes, it was a different version of like Davy and Goliath. There was definitely a moral to the story, right?
Right. That, you know, whether it was the trans taxi driver he had that time or the Jeffersons next door, anything. So there were race issues, there were out of wedlock, marriage issues, birth issues, religion. But at the end of the day, Archie learned a lesson in many ways and was a better person for it and dealing with people different than him. And I'm glad for Melissa Gilbert.
And this caught my eye. Actually, Tim and I were just out in Los Angeles, the entertainment capital of the world. And so that's actually when I saw this piece, I thought, how appropriate. Our last article also comes from LA. And we were there in the wake of the horrific wildfires. The headline reads, cannabis community rallies to help fire victims one bong and one fundraiser at a time. So this is interesting, and I never thought of it myself. But if you're a medical marijuana patient, or you're a recreational user, and it's legal in California, and if you were a victim of one of these bad fires, a lot of your personal, most of your personal life went up in flames, including probably your paraphernalia and your supply of marijuana. And so some guy says, not everyone thinks about putting that stuff in their go bag, you know, that bag that has maybe your passport, your checkbook, important things, the deed to the house, stuff like that. They're doing a drive to collect materials, you know, whether it's paraphernalia or the cannabis itself, and they've set up locations where people can come to get some stuff and to partake, whatever, because if they may have it for medical reasons, or again, it's legal there and it could be for recreational use. But do you remember the movie Clueless, Tim?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you remember when Cher does the Pismo Beef Relish? And she's like dragging a pair of skis through the house. And her dad goes, Cher, they don't need skis. She goes, Daddy, they lost everything, including athletic equipment. So I think I just thought of this. And I thought, this is brilliant. This is right there with that.
Yeah, they said drop boxes were set up at 6 local dispensaries. And the call went out to the cannabis community in search of, and some of these things I didn't know, unused dab rings. Bonds, yeah, vaporizers, pipes, rolling trays, grinders, odor-proof storage bags, pouches, containers, joint rollers, and cone fillers, rolling papers, lighters, and cleaning supplies. And it's funny you found this, because I thought, yeah, that was probably if you just ran out of your house or you needed to evacuate.
The last thing on your mind, right?
Right. And, you know, you get your pets, you get grandma, you do whatever you need to do. But the other thing about this, and they said they're waiving some of the the laws that they have. Each state has their own laws regarding cannabis. And then, of course, there's the federal issue because it's not legal federally, although, what, 28 states now have it, which is majority of the population. And they talked about some of the issues with California, which I was surprised about, of when you can consume and not consume, or how long you can consume, where you can consume. And so it got into that a little bit, and I thought, God, I didn't even realize that it was that regulated in California.
Highly.
I think Colorado didn't appear when you and I worked on a project in Colorado. It didn't appear to have a lot of this on-site premise laws that seemed to be in California. That was a good story. Fun
little piece to end with. So as I mentioned at the top of the podcast, our partner here, Critics' Choice Video, America's classic movie and TV authority since 1987, invites you to visit their site by going to ours, focusgroupradio.com, and clicking on the Critics' Choice Video logo. They have an amazing array of stuff. Obviously, movies, TV shows, but also books, toys, games, you name it. And you can also order a catalog, which I always like getting. It's in their menu system in the upper left corner. You could get it like every 4 to 6 weeks, and it's nonlinear shopping at its best. I'm at the homepage now, and I see a couple of things that I love. There's one of these. It's for the Popeye movie, Popeye DVD, and it looks like the movie comes in a can. You remember he always ate spinach?
Oh my God, yeah.
So what did you see?
So which popped up on mine, it's actually released today, so it's a new release. It's Saturday Night Live 50th Anniversary Collection, Season 1 through 5. So
I saw that too on mine, yeah.
Yeah, so it's released today, February 4th, and you're going to save close to $50 if you get it through Critics' Choice Video. It's $127.46, but it's 117 hours and 106 episodes. And some of the musical guests you can remember is great 70s Carly Simon, Patti Smith, James Taylor, The Kinks, Elvis Costello, Billy Joel. And of course, the old original cast, which some say was the actual best cast, with Aykroyd, Belushi, Chevy Chase, Jane Curtin, Bill Murray, and such. So, Gilda Radner. I haven't seen these in so long. And as a little kid, I'm not sure, or when we were younger and you could sneak to watch them or something, I might have understood all the humor. Mm-hmm. So for me, it would be interesting to get something like this. So, Saturday Night Live 50th Anniversary Collection, I think would be pretty cool. Do you remember watching that as a kid, or did you watch it? Did you get to watch it?
So I remember being told by friends like in high school and stuff,
right,
around that age, that we had to be watching Monty Python and the Flying Circus and Saturday Night Live. Those are the things you had to be paying attention to.
Yep. So, hey, so thanks for joining us today here on TFG Unbuttoned. We appreciate you spending time with us, and thanks to our friends at Critics' Choice Video. It's America's classic movie and TV authority since 1987. You can get there by going to focusgroupradio.com and clicking on the Critics' Choice Video logo. We hope everyone has a great week. Be sure to catch our show, The Focus Group with Tim Bennett and John Nash, released on Wednesdays, and you can, again, find all of our media housed at focusgroupradio.com. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time on TFG Unbuttoned.
It's The Focus Group Unbuttoned with Tim Bennett and John Nash, available every Tuesday. Learn more about Tim and John, Unbuttoned, and all of the Focus Group platforms at focusgroupradio.com.